From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. A new study on the effectiveness of a labeling law in California has found that such regulations actually work. Anybody living in California has likely noticed Proposition 65 warning labels. They're seen inside parking garages and even on coffee beans, and are the result of a ballot initiative that passed in 1986, requiring that companies put warning labels on products that could contain significant amounts of chemicals known to cause cancer. The study published this week in the Journal for Environmental Health found that hazardous lead content found in chili and tamarind candies, as well as in faux leather purses, declined significantly over several years. Both those types of products were known to have had high lead contamination. My guest is Caroline Cox, senior scientist with the Center for Environmental Health. She leads the CEH's research on toxic exposure, and she was the co-author of the lead study that was just published. Welcome, Caroline.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks for joining us. So first, let's talk about what it was that Proposition 65 actually required. I mentioned it passed in 1986. It was very popular, passed by a large margin. What, at this point, constitutes a requirement to put a label on? If you're a manufacturer, under what circumstances are you required to put on a warning label?
So what happens with Prop 65 is that there's a state agency with kind of a tongue twister of a name, the Office of Environmental Health Hazard and Assessment, whose job it is to implement the law. And one of the things they do is decide what chemicals will be part of the Prop 65 chemical list. Those are chemicals known to the state of California to cause cancer or reproductive harm. Some chemicals have been on the Prop 65 list since, you know, soon after the law was passed. Others have been added more recently. Lead, because we know so much about its toxicity and the problems that it causes both for children and adults, it's been on the Prop 65 list for a long time. So what happens when there's a chemical on the Prop 65 list? Is the law requires that if a product will expose people to a significant amount of that chemical, then the manufacturer must provide a warning before people are exposed. So there's two ways to comply with Prop 65. You know, if you're a manufacturer of a product that's being sold in California that contains one of the chemicals on the list, one way you can comply is by putting a warning. The other way you can comply is by removing that toxic chemical from the product.
Right. It seems this is a very innovative approach to regulating chemicals, that you give these the manufacturers and a way to actually fix the problem or deal with a label. Because, of course, the complaint whenever you try to regulate companies is, well, it's going to cost too much. Well, then you can just put a label on it. And I'm guessing that what some of these candy manufacturers found that had been found to have high lead content is that putting a label saying that your product could cause cancer results in slightly slower sales, perhaps.
Yeah, that's certainly the idea. And I've spoken with some of the people who were involved, you know, back in 1986 in, you know, the passage of the ballot initiative. And they told me that they never expected that anybody would want to put a warning on a product or even a parking garage. You know, they completely expected that manufacturers would, you know, change the way they make their products in order to comply. And in fact, even though we do see a lot of warnings in California, a lot of companies have chosen to comply by essentially eliminating the toxic chemical at issue. And that's what we've seen with lead in these two particular product categories.
Right. So let's talk about that. This is the study. The study didn't, of course, I understand, look at every single product that we know to be contaminated with every single kind of chemical. It picked a narrow set of products and one chemical, right?
Right. So there are very few products or chemicals for which, you know, we actually have like a long-term data set, so we can look at, you know, what's happened over time as a following Prop 65 litigation. It does happen in case of these chili and tamarind candies, and in the case of the faux leather purses, that we do have that kind of long-term data set. So we were able to say, you know, what was it like when the litigation started, and then what did we see in the years following the litigation?
I mean, why was there lead in chili and tamarind candies to begin with? You know, this is just so strange. I understand that there was an Orange County Register article that years ago that found that these candies, many of them imported from Mexico, had just unacceptable levels of lead that, you know, consumed by children.
Yeah, it's certainly not something that I think people expect when they buy candy. But what happened during the course of the litigation is there were what's called audits, where experts went and looked at the candy manufacturing plants and the places where the ingredients for the candy were grown and tried to answer, you know, that exact question, where is the lead coming from? And what they found was that, you know, there wasn't a simple answer, like most things. Life is complicated. But one source of lead is just that because of there was so much lead used in the past in gasoline, there is lead just dispersed all over the environment, and especially along roadsides. And sometimes this lead would blow onto the chili peppers in the field where they were growing. And if the chili peppers weren't washed before they were dried, then that lead dust would, you know, end up in the chili peppers.
And of course, we know that lead is an extremely toxic chemical. So when this law was passed in 1986, so it's just been decades, aside from this one study that was just published that showed in very clear terms that you see these the content reducing over several years. What are the other impacts that it had? Did Prop 65 passing in one state in the country have a ripple effect politically and even at around the U.S., but also even at the federal level?
Yeah, so, I mean, what we've seen is that California is a big state with a big economy. We purchase a lot of products, but in most cases, a company doesn't want to make a special product just for California. So when they go to the effort to change the way they make the product to remove a toxic chemical, they'll do that for all the products they make, the ones that are sold in California and the ones that are sold elsewhere. So we have definitely seen a ripple effect from California through the rest of the country.
I understand that in 2008, President Bush signed the Consumer Product Safety Improvement Act. That, in part, was the result of your organization's Center for Environmental Health's litigation on a number of cases around Prop 65 requirements, right?
Right. So anybody who remembers back to 2007, you remember that there was a huge amount of publicity because there were some, you know, famous popular toys that were found to have lead-containing paint on them. And people just got, you know, really upset. You don't want to buy a birthday present for your child and find out that it actually is exposing them to lead. And so there was kind of a bipartisan effort to say, let's take care of this problem. And so the law was passed, set really strict limits for lead in children's products. And while the law was being passed, we worked on Prop 65 litigation in collaboration with the California Attorney General about some of these toys that were found with lead problems. So that just gave it sort of an added incentive for the manufacturers to support the bill.
So it seems as though we see over all of these years that Prop 65 has been in place just as one law in one state, that it actually works, right, Caroline? When you regulate companies, basically forcing them by law to have safer products, eventually they comply. And now we have a president who's who seems hell-bent on undoing regulations at the federal level that are protecting consumers. How, you know, shouldn't this study and all the other results from Prop 65 be a very clear showcase for how regulation actually works to protect public safety?
We would certainly hope that would be the case. And I think the original authors of the ballot initiative were, a bit cynical. They said, we really need to deal with toxic chemical exposures, and we need to be able to sort of take it into our own hands because government has, kind of let us down. And I would say that, in the current administration, there's, even more sentiment that way. And what is happening is that there are some parts of the industry associations that are taking advantage of the political climate to try to pass a federal law that would essentially eliminate state laws like Proposition 65. So we're really hoping to protect the right of states to pass these kind of laws and act as, nimble, health-protecting states.
I understand that there's a bill that was introduced last year, the Accurate Labels Act, that refers, I think, to what you were just suggesting, that would essentially, unlike what its name is suggesting, would actually block the ability of states like California to have laws like Prop 65?
Correct. And that bill we've heard may come back again in this session of Congress. So we're working really hard to try to, put the brakes on it. And it would impact not just Prop 65, but many of the other states in the country that have passed various kinds of labeling or warning laws.
Now, Prop 65 went pretty far in requiring these labels or essentially, forcing manufacturers to remove the chemicals. But what more needs to be done? Because, we still have toxic chemicals in products that that consumers use, that children use. I mean, it was only recently, right, in California that flame retardant chemicals were basically made illegal. I mean, it's not that Prop 65 solved everything, right?
I don't think there's ever a silver bullet. The issue of toxic chemical exposures is really complicated. It's going to take multiple ways of finding solutions. But I do think that it's made a significant contribution.
I mean, we just also recently saw the $80 million settlement in San Francisco when a man who has non-Hodgkin's lymphoma after using Roundup Ready by Monsanto for years was essentially, a jury found in his favor. And Monsanto has been attempting to avoid for years making the links between pesticide exposure and cancer. So those struggles are quite real, and it's quite difficult to fight these battles in court and also legislatively. So if you do have California's Prop 65 showing in studies like the one you just co-authored that regulations actually work, could those studies be the basis of legal defenses against federal encroachments like the Accurate Labels Act? I mean, couldn't you show through a study like this that it actually works?
I think so, yes. I'm not an attorney and I can't speak to the legal aspects of it, but it's certainly helpful you know, when you have a bill going through Congress, to have, you know, relatively clear and long-term data sets that show the success of the law.
Now, we talked about the tamarind and chili candy, but we didn't get to talk about the faux leather purses in the study that you authored. Tell us a little bit about that. Why was there lead contamination and how much did it drop as far as you can tell?
So I think folks have probably seen the brightly colored faux leather purses that have been popular for a while. And it turns out that in the past, many of those brightly colored pigments that were used to make those purses were lead-based pigments. And so what we did was use Prop 65 and litigation to get the fashion companies to switch to pigments that did not contain lead.
So it wasn't that these companies just did it on their own. This was the result of actual pushing. And then through testing, you found that they did indeed reduce their lead, the lead exposure in those purses.
Yeah.
These sorts of chemicals, of course, are so insidious because they're invisible. Do you think that the public knows enough about the success of Prop 65? I mean, it seems as though sometimes we might become immune to those labels that we see all around us. Oh, you know, what are we going to do? Not go into the parking garage that has that label on it or try to avoid it actively? And so it feels as though we kind of take for granted that these labels are there and may not really understand that that law requiring those labels have actually worked. Do you think that there's been not enough publicity, not enough media coverage?
I definitely think that's true. So, you know, people see the warnings, you know, like on the parking garages or at their favorite coffee place. What they don't see is all the companies that have taken health protective action to remove toxic chemicals from their products. And so we're all exposed to fewer toxic chemicals, but it's invisible. You can't see it the way that you can see a warning. And so that's another reason why, you know, I was really pleased to be able to publish this study, because at least, you know, in a small way, it demonstrates that what you can't see is actually, you know, really good news.
Right. And unfortunately, of course, the chemicals themselves are also invisible. And so before those labels, we couldn't see the chemicals that were impacting us. But maybe there is even some sort of benefit to seeing those warning labels around us to make us think about the fact that all around us are chemicals that are often toxic that we don't think about and that companies sort of knowingly put into their products. I understand that one of the results of Prop 65 that we didn't get to talk about yet is the colorant used in popular sodas made, you know, basically colas by Pepsi and Coke.
Most colas contain caramel coloring to give it that nice brown color that people have, you know, associated with Coke and Pepsi and other cola drinks. Unfortunately, in the past, that caramel coloring was contaminated with a real tongue twister of a chemical, methyl imidazole, and that is a chemical that causes cancer. And so it was added to the Proposition 65 list. And what happened is that both Coke and Pepsi was, you know, a bit of a laggard, but compared to Coke, they both worked with their caramel coloring suppliers to change the caramel coloring so that it wasn't contaminated, and thus avoided putting any warnings on Coke and Pepsi. So again, the success of the law is invisible, but it's there. Today, there's a lot less methyl imidazole in colas than there was prior to it being added to the Prop 65 list. And that's just a good thing. I'm not recommending that everybody drink a lot of colas because, you know, there's a lot of reasons.
Right.
They may not be good for you, but at least this one chemical it shouldn't be a problem anymore.
So are there further studies that you are hoping to do to continue to see if Proposition 65 is working beyond this lead study? Because there's, of course, a very large list of chemicals that Prop 65 requires be labeled, ensuring that there's continued compliance?
Yeah, there's a couple of University of California researchers who are working on a large project evaluating the success of Prop 65. And I think, you know, it's still a year or two away from being finished, but that's going to be a great collection of information when it comes out.
And how can people support your organization and also find out more about the work that the Center for Environmental Health does?
Well, I'd invite anybody who's interested to visit our website, which is ceh.org. When you go to our website, you can read a lot about what we're doing. You can sign up to be on our email list. You can sign up to follow us on Facebook or Twitter. And you can also make a donation if you want. Encourage everyone to check out the website.
Right, because your organization has been instrumental in helping the Proposition 65 legal cases and the studies move forward. So thank you so much for joining us, Caroline, and good luck with all the work that you're doing.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
My guest has been Caroline Cox, senior scientist for the Center for Environmental Health. She leads the CEH's research on toxic exposure, and she co-authored the lead study published in the Journal for Environmental Health this week, showing the success of Proposition 65. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our audio podcast on iTunes, and our video channel on Vimeo.